but I was too weak and too broken. So when it came time for me to stand up and speak, I couldn't. Physically, emotionally, mentally, I was stuck in that chair, but I tried to stand. My lawyer grabbed my arm to make sure I didn't collapse, and then I think he might have read something out loud for me. I don't know. I'm still not clear on what happened in the courtroom that day, because that day was so much like that night. A nightmare that I was somehow watching play out from a distance. I had tunnel vision. I knew there were people around me, and I knew the judge was speaking, but my brain was so exhausted, I couldn't process what anyone was saying. Even when the judge read my sentence, I had no reaction, because I couldn't absorb it. It wasn't until later, after I was given an IV for dehydration, that I found out I had been sentenced to 7 years in prison, with the eligibility for parole even sooner than that. 7 years, I remember thinking. That's bullshit. That isn't nearly long enough. I try not to think about what it must have been like for you in that car after I left you there. What you must have thought of me. Did you think I had been thrown from the car? Were you looking for me? Or did you know I had left you there all alone? It's the time you spent alone that night that I know haunts us all. Because we'll never know what you went through. What you were thinking. Who you were calling out to. What your final minutes were like. I can't imagine a more painful way for your mother and father to be forced to live out the rest of their lives. Sometimes I wonder if that's why Diem is here. Maybe Diem was your way of making sure your parents would be okay. But in that same vein, not having Diem in my life would mean it's your way of punishing me. It's okay. I deserve it. I plan to fight it, but I know I deserve it. Every morning I wake up and I silently apologize. To you, to your parents, to Diem. Throughout the day, I silently thank your parents for raising our daughter since we can't. And every night I apologize again before I fall asleep. I'm sorry. Thank you. I'm sorry. That's my day. Every day on repeat. I'm sorry. Thank you. I'm sorry. My sentence was not justice considering the way you died. Eternity would be justice. But I hope your family knows my actions that night didn't come from a place of selfishness. It was horror and shock and agony and confusion and terror that guided me away from you that night. It was never selfishness. I am not a bad person. And I know you know that, wherever you are. And I know you forgive me. It's just who you are. I only hope one day our daughter will forgive me too. And your parents. Then maybe, by some miracle, I can start to forgive myself. Until then, I love you. I miss you. I'm sorry. Thank you. I'm sorry. Thank you. I'm sorry. Repeat. Chapter 34. Kenna. I close out the document. I can't read anymore. My eyes have filled with tears. I'm surprised I made it as far as I did before crying, but I tried not to absorb the words as I was reading them aloud. I set my phone aside and I wipe my eyes. Ledger hasn't moved. He's in the same position, leaning against his driver's side door, staring straight ahead. My voice is no longer filling his truck. Now there's just a silence that's thick and uninviting, to the point that Ledger can't seem to take it anymore. He swings open his door and gets out of his truck. He walks to the back of it and begins unloading the table without so much as a word. I watch him in the rearview mirror. Once the table is on the ground, he grabs one of the chairs. There's a pause before he chucks the chair onto the table. It lands with a loud clank that I feel in my chest. Then Ledger grabs a second chair and angrily tosses it across the yard. He's so mad. I can't watch. I lean forward and press my hands against my face, regretting ever reading a single word of that to him. I have no idea if he's mad at the situation or me, or if he's just back there throwing chairs as a way to process 5 years' worth of emotions. Fuck! He yells, right before I hear the crash of the final chair. His voice reverberates in the dense trees that surround his property. The whole truck shakes with the slam of his tailgate. Then there's just silence. Stillness. The only thing I can hear is my shallow and rapid breathing. I'm scared to get out of the truck, because I don't want to have to come face to face with him if any of that outburst was directed at me. I wish I knew. I swallow a lump that forms in my throat when I hear his footsteps crunching against the gravel. He stops at my door and he opens it. I'm still leaning forward with my face in my hands, but I eventually pull them away and hesitantly look up at him. He's gripping the top of the truck, leaning in my doorway. His head is resting against the inside of his raised arm. His eyes are red, but his expression isn't filled with hatred. It isn't even filled with anger. If anything, he looks apologetic, as if he knows his outburst scared me and he feels bad.
I'm not mad at you.
He presses his lips together and looks down. He shakes his head gently.
It's just a lot to process.
I nod, but I can't speak because my heart is pounding and my throat feels swollen, and I'm still not sure what to say. He's still looking down when he lets go of the roof of the truck. His eyes meet mine as he reaches into the truck and puts his right hand on my left thigh and his left hand under my right knee. He pulls me to the edge of the passenger seat so that I'm facing him. Ledger then takes my face in his hands and tilts it so that I'm looking up at him. He blows out a slow breath, like what he's about to say is hard to get out.
I'm sorry you lost him.
I can't hold back the tears after that. It's the first time anyone has ever acknowledged that I lost Scotty that night, too. Ledger's words mean more to me than I think he can comprehend. Agony spreads across his face as he continues.
What if Scotty can see how we've been treating you?
A tear forms and spills down his cheek. Just one lonely tear, and it makes me so sad.
I'm part of everything that's been tearing you down all these years. And I'm sorry, Kenna. I'm so sorry.
I place my hand over his chest, right over his heart. It's okay. What I wrote doesn't change anything. It was still my fault.
It's not okay. None of this is okay.
He's cradling me in his arms with his cheek pressed against the top of my head. He runs his right hand in soothing circles over my back. He holds me like that for a long time. I don't want to let him go. He's the first person I've been able to share the full details of that night with, and I wasn't sure if it would make things better or worse. But this feels better. So maybe that means something. I feel like a weight has been lifted. It's not the weight of the anchor that keeps me tethered under the surface. That won't be lifted until I get to hold my daughter. But a small portion of my pain has attached to his sympathy, and it feels like he's physically lifting me up for air, allowing me a few minutes to breathe. He eventually pulls back far enough to assess me. He must see something on my face that makes him want to comfort me, because he presses a soft kiss to my forehead while brushing my hair back tenderly. He kisses the tip of my nose and then plants a soft peck on my lips. I don't think he expected me to kiss him back, but I feel more for him in this moment than I ever have. I clutch his shirt in my fists and quietly beg his mouth for a much fuller kiss. He gives it to me. His kisses feel like both forgiveness and promises. I imagine mine feel like apologies to him, because he keeps coming back for more every time we separate. I end up on my back, and he's halfway into his truck, hovering over me, our mouths pressed together. When we're in the thick of fogging up all the windows, he pulls away from my neck, and there's a split-second look he gives me. It's so quick. It's a flicker, a flash. But I can tell he wants more in that quick glance, and so do I. So I nod, and he pulls away and opens his glove box. He grabs a condom and starts to open it with his teeth, bracing himself up with one arm. I take this opportunity to slide my panties off and bunch my long skirt up around my waist. He gets the package open, but then he pauses. The seconds begin to drag as he silently stares down at me with contemplation. Then he tosses the condom aside and lowers himself on top of me again. He presses a soft kiss against my lips. His breath is hot against my cheek when he says,
"You deserve a bed."
I drag a hand through his hair. "You don't have a bed here?" He shakes his head.
"Nope."
"Not even an inflatable mattress?"
"Our first two times were on an inflatable mattress. You deserve a real bed. And no, I don't have either one here."
"How about a hammock?" He smiles at that, but still shakes his head. "A yoga mat? I'm not picky." He laughs and kisses my chin.
"Stop it, or we'll end up fucking in this truck."
I wrap my legs around his waist. "And that's bad how?" He groans into my neck, and then I lift my hips and he gives in. He grabs the condom and finishes opening it. While he's doing that, I'm unzipping his jeans. He slides on the condom and then pulls me to the edge of the seat. His truck is the perfect height for this. Neither of us even has to adjust ourselves or change positions. He just grips my hips and pushes into me. And even though it isn't a real bed, it's still just as good as it was last night.
Chapter 35. Ledger. I don't know how I found the strength to pull away from her long enough to go inside and get the floors started. I figured she'd sit back and watch me, or write in her notebook, but as soon as I told her I needed to get some work finished, she asked how she could help. It's been 3 hours. We've mostly worked, with the occasional short break to rehydrate and kiss some more, but we've finished most of what will be the living room floor. We'd be done by now if she weren't wearing that shirt with that skirt. She's been crawling across the floor, helping me lock the flooring into place, and every time I look at her, I can see straight down her shirt. I'm so distracted, I'm surprised I haven't injured myself. We haven't discussed a single thing of importance since we exited the truck. It's as if we left all the important stuff inside it, and chose to carry nothing of weight with us into this house. It's been such a heavy day already. I'm doing everything I can to keep things light. We both are. I haven't brought up the letter since we came inside. She hasn't mentioned the restraining order. I haven't mentioned Mother's Day under this roof. We haven't talked about what our new physical connection means or how we're possibly going to navigate it. I think we both know the conversations will come. But right now, it feels like we're on the same page, and all we want out of today's page is to ride the high of each other. I think Kenna and I needed today. Kenna especially needed today. She always looks like she's carrying the weight of the world on her shoulders, but today she looks like she's floating. She makes gravity seem powerless against her. She's smiled and laughed more in the last few hours than she has since the day I met her. It makes me wonder if I've been a huge chunk of the weight she's been carrying. Kenna locks the piece of wood in place on her end and then reaches for a bottle of water. She catches me staring at her chest, and she laughs. "You sure do have a hard time looking me in the eye now." "I think I have an obsession with your shirt." She usually wears t-shirts, but this particular shirt is made out of a slinky material that dips down in the front, and now that she's been working for 3 hours, it's starting to stick to her in all the places where she's sweating. "That shirt is fucking lovely." She laughs, and I want to kiss her again. I crawl over to her, and when I reach her, I press my mouth to hers so hard she falls backward against the floor. I kiss her through her laughter until I'm on top of her. I hate that I have no furniture. We just keep ending up on the hardwood floor we've been installing, and it's nice, but I'd give anything to kiss her on something more comfortable. Something as soft as her mouth. "You'll never finish these floors," she whispers. "Fuck the floors." We kiss for a few minutes, and we just keep getting better at it. There's a lot of pulling and tugging and tasting, and it gets a little chaotic, and her shirt that I love so fucking much ends up somewhere on the floor next to us. I'm admiring her bra now, kissing her skin right above it, when she whispers, "I'm scared." Her hands are in my hair, and she keeps them there when I lift up just enough to look down at her. "What if they find out about us before you have a chance to tell them? We're being reckless." I don't want her to think about this today, because today is good, and they're out of town, so there's no point in dwelling on it until they return. I press a comforting kiss against her forehead. "Worrying won't make the situation any better," I say. "They're out of town. Whatever happens is going to happen, whether we make out right now or not." She smiles when I say that. "Good point." She wraps her hand around my neck and pulls me back to her mouth. I lower myself on top of her, but then whisper, "What's the worst that could happen if I have to hide you forever? You've seen my closet, Kenna. It's huge. You'll love it in there." She laughs against my mouth. "I could install a mini fridge and a television for you. When they come to visit, you can just go to your closet and pretend you're on vacation." "You're terrible for joking about this," she says, but she's laughing. I kiss her until we aren't laughing anymore, and then I slide off her until I'm lying next to her, leaning over her. It's the first time we've really looked at each other without feeling like we have to look away. She's so goddamn flawless. I don't say that out loud, though, because I don't want to diminish any of the other wonderful things about her by giving her a superficial compliment about her face. It would take away from how smart I think she is, and how compassionate, resilient, and spirited she is. I look away from her impeccable face and slowly trace the center of her cleavage until she has chills running across her skin. I have to finish my floors. I slide my hand over to her breast and gently squeeze. "Stop distracting me with these things. Put your shirt back on." She laughs, at the same time someone clears their throat from across the room. I quickly sit up, immediately scrambling to block the view of Kenna from whoever the fuck is in my house. I look up to find my parents standing in the doorway, looking at the ceiling. Kenna immediately scrambles away from me and reaches for her shirt.
"Oh my God," she whispers. "Who are they?"
"My parents," I mutter. I swear, embarrassing me is their favorite hobby. I raise my voice so they can hear me. "Nice of you to warn me you were showing up today." I help Kenna to her feet, and my parents are still looking at everything but us as I help her back into her shirt. My father says, "I cleared my throat when we walked in. How much warning do you need?" I'm not as mortified as I probably should be right now. Maybe I'm growing immune to their shenanigans. But Kenna isn't immune. Now that she's dressed and halfway standing behind me, my father motions at the work we've been doing.
"Seems you've made a lot of progress on the floors."
"In more ways than one," my mother says, amused. Kenna buries her face against my arm.
"Who's your friend, Ledger?"
My mother is smiling, but she has a lot of different smiles, and they don't always mean something sweet. This smile is her entertained smile. Her this-is-so-much-fun smile. This is... I have no idea how to introduce Kenneth to them. I don't even know what name to use. They'd definitely recognize her name if I said Kenna, but I'm not exactly sure they won't recognize her face, so lying to them would be pointless. This is... my new employee. I need to ask Kenna how she wants me to confront this. I wrap my arm around her shoulder and lead her to the bedroom. Excuse us while we go coordinate our lies, I say over my shoulder. Kenna and I make it to the bedroom, out of their view, and she looks at me wide-eyed.
You can't tell them who I am, she whispers.
I can't lie to them. My mom will probably recognize you once she gets a better look at you. She was at your sentencing, and she never forgets a face. She also knows you're back in town. Kenna looks like she's about to fold in on herself. She starts to pace, and I can see the weight of the world begin to return to her shoulders. She looks up at me with fear in her eyes.
Do they hate me?
That question digs at my heart, mainly because she's starting to tear up. And it's only in this moment that I realize she assumes everyone who knew Scotty must hate her.
No. Of course they don't hate you.
I realize as I say those words that I don't necessarily know if they're true. My parents were heartbroken when Scotty died. He was as important to them as I am to Patrick and Grace. But I'm not sure that I've ever had a conversation with my parents specifically about their opinion of Kenna. It was over 5 years ago. I can't remember what conversations were had or what their thoughts were on everything that happened. And we barely discuss it anymore. Kenna can see that I'm processing, and she grows a little panicked.
Can't you just take me home? I can sneak out the back and meet you at your truck.
Whether my parents realize who Kenna is or not, Kenna doesn't know what kind of people my parents are. She doesn't realize she has nothing to be concerned about. I cup her face with my hands. Kenna, they're my parents. If they recognize you, they'll have my back no matter what. Those words calm her a little bit. I'll introduce you as Nicole for now. And then I'll take you home and deal with them and the truth later. Okay? They're good people. So are you. She nods, so I give her a quick kiss and grab her hand and lead her out of the bedroom. They're in the kitchen now, inspecting all the things Roman and I have added since they were last out here. When they notice our return, they both casually lean against the counters, anticipating this introduction. I wave a hand at Kenna. This is Nicole. I wave a hand at my parents. My mother, Robin. My father, Benji. Kenna smiles and shakes their hands, but then she sidles back up to my side like she's scared to move too far away from me. I grab her hand that's at her side, and I move it behind her back and squeeze it to provide her with a little comfort.
It's such a pleasant surprise that you aren't alone, my mother says. We thought you'd be out here moping by yourself today.
I'm scared to ask. Why would I be moping? My mother laughs and turns to my father.
You owe me $10, Benji.
She holds out her hand, and my father pulls out his wallet and slaps a $10 bill in her palm. She shoves it in the pocket of her jeans.
We bet on whether you'd even remember you were supposed to be leaving for your honeymoon today.
Why am I not surprised? Which one of you bet that I'd forget Mother's Day? My mother raises her hand. I didn't forget. Check your email. I sent a gift card because I had no idea where to send flowers to this week. My mother takes the $10 bill out of her pocket and hands it back to my father. She walks over to me and finally gives me a hug.
Thank you.
She doesn't look at Kenna, because her attention is stolen mid-hug by the patio door.
Oh, wow! It looks even better than I imagined.
She releases me and passes us to go play with the accordion-style door. My father is still focused on me and Kenna. I can tell he's going to attempt to be polite and include her in conversation, but I know how much she wants to be ignored right now. Nicole has to get to work, I blurt out. I need to give her a ride, and then I can meet you both at the house. My mother makes a sound behind me.
We just got here, she says. I wanted a tour of everything you've done.
My father's attention is still on Kenna.
What do you do, Nicole? Besides,
he waves a hand toward me.
Besides Ledger.
Kenna gasps quietly and says,
Well, okay, well, I don't do Ledger.
I squeeze her hand again, because that is not what my father meant. But if we're being technical, I think he means, what do you do other than work for me? She's looking at me blankly.
Because I said you're my employee earlier. But then I just lied and said you have to go to work, and they know my bar is closed on Sundays, so he assumes you have a different job besides the bar, and he said, what do you do besides...
I'm rambling now, and it's just making the moment worse because my parents can hear this conversation, and I know they are enjoying the shit out of it. My mother has returned to my father's side, and she's grinning with delight.
Please take me home,
Kenna pleads. I nod.
Yeah, this is torture.
It's such a treat for me, though, my mother says.
I think this might be my favorite Mother's Day yet.
And here we were thinking he was going to be sad because he didn't get married, my father says. What do you think he has in store for Father's Day?
I can only imagine, my mother says.
You two are mortifying. I'm almost 30. When will this stop?
You're 28, my mother says. That's not almost 30. 29 is almost 30. Let's go, I say to Kenna.
No, bring her to dinner,
my mother begs.
She's not hungry.
I lead Kenna out the door.
I'll meet you both at the house.
We're almost to my truck when I realize what leaving my parents alone means. I pause and say, I'll be right back. I point to the truck so Kenna knows she can go ahead without me. I turn around and walk back to the house, and then I lean in at the doorway. Do not have sex in my house.
Oh, come on, my father says. We would never.
I'm serious. This is my new house, and I'll be damned if you two christen it.
We won't,
my mother says, shooing me away.
We're getting too old for that anyway, my father says. So old. Our son is almost 30.
I step out of the doorway and motion for them to leave. Get out.
Go. I don't trust either of you.
I wait for them to join me outside, and then I lock the front door. I point toward their car.
I'll meet you at the house.
I walk to my truck and ignore their chatter. I wait for my parents to back out, and then Kenna and I both sigh simultaneously.
They can be a lot, sometimes, I admit. Wow. That was...
typical of them. I glance over at her, and she's smiling.
It was embarrassing, but I kind of liked them, she says. But I'm still not having dinner with them.
I don't blame her. I put my truck in reverse and then point to the middle of the seat. Now that we've shattered whatever line we had drawn in the sand, I want her to be as close to me as she can get. She slides across the seat until she's right next to me, and I put my hand on her knee as I drive away from the house.
You do that a lot, she says.
I do what?
You point all the time. It's rude.
She sounds amused rather than offended.
I don't point all the time.
You do too,
I noticed it the first night I came into your bar. It's why I let you kiss me, because I thought it was hot, the way you kept pointing at things.
I grin. You just said it was rude. You think rude is hot?
No, I think kindness is hot. Maybe rude was the wrong term.
She leans her head against my shoulder.
I find your pointing sexy.
Do you? I let go of her knee and point at a mailbox. See that mailbox? Then I point at a tree. Look at that tree. I tap on my brakes as we close in on a stop sign, and I point at the sign. Look at that, Kenna.
What's that?
Is that a fucking pigeon? She tilts her head and looks at me curiously. When I come to a full stop at the sign, she says,
Scotty used to say that sometimes. What does it mean?
I shake my head. It was just something he used to say. Patrick is the only one who knows where that phrase originated, and even though there's no huge secret or story behind it, I still want to hold on to it. Kenna doesn't press me. She just lifts up and kisses me before I pull out onto the street. She's smiling, and it feels so good to see her smile like this. I look back at the road and put my hand on her knee again. She rests her head against my shoulder, and after a quiet moment, she says,
I wish I could have seen you with Scotty. I bet you two were fun together.
I love that she admitted that out loud. It feels good to hear, because at some point, we're all going to have to move past the fact that Scotty died the way he did. I think I'm at a point where I want his memory to be accompanied by only good feelings. I want to be able to talk about him with people, especially with his father, but in a way that doesn't make Patrick cry. We all knew Scotty, but we all knew him in different ways. We all carry different memories of him. I think it would be good for Patrick and Grace to get to hear the memories Kenna has of Scotty that none of the rest of us have.
I wish I could have seen you with Scotty, I admit.
Kenna kisses my shoulder and then rests her head there again. It's quiet until I lift my hand and point at a guy on a bicycle. Look at that bike. I point at an upcoming gas station. Look at those gas pumps. I point at a cloud. Look at that cloud.
Kenna releases laughter mixed with a groan. Stop! You're ruining the sexiness of it.
I reluctantly dropped Kenna off at her apartment 2 hours ago. It might have taken 15 minutes for me to stop kissing her long enough to walk back to my truck, but I didn't want to leave. I wanted to spend the rest of the evening, and possibly even the night, with her. But my parents are assholes who don't believe in schedules, and they're always showing up at the worst times. At least this time it was in the middle of the day. They once showed up at 3 a.m., and I woke up to my father blasting Nirvana in the backyard and cooking steaks on the grill. My father made burgers tonight, and we just finished eating dinner about an hour ago. I waited throughout the whole dinner for them to ask me about Kenna, or Nicole, rather, but neither of them brought it up. All we've talked about tonight has been their latest adventures on the road and my latest adventures with Diem. They were disappointed to find out Diem and the Landrys are out of town. I suggested they call ahead the next time they feel like dropping in. It would make it easier on all of us. My parents have always gotten along with Scotty's parents, but the Landrys had Scotty later in life, so they're a little older than my parents. I would say they're more mature than my parents, but immature isn't the right term to describe my parents. They're just a little more carefree and unstructured. But even though I wouldn't categorize the four of them as actively close, they share a bond because of Scotty and me. And because DM is like a daughter to me, she's been like a granddaughter to my parents, which means DM is important to them, and they want the best for her. Which is probably why, as soon as my father goes to the backyard to clean up the grill, my mother slides onto the bar stool and gives me one of her many smiles. This is her, "You have a secret and you better spill it," smile. I ignore her smile, and her, and continue to wash the rest of the dishes, but my mother says, "Get over here and talk to me before your father comes back inside." I dry my hands and sit across the bar from her. She's looking at me like she already knows my secrets. It doesn't surprise me. When I say my mother never forgets a face, I don't say that lightly. It's like a superpower. "Do the Landrys know?" she asks. I play dumb. "Know what?" Her head lilts to the side.
"I know who she is, Ledger. I recognized her the day she walked into your bar."
"Wait,
what?"
"The day you were drunk?" She nods. Now that I think about it, I remember her staring at Kenna when she walked into my bar that day. Why would she not say anything to me about that? She didn't even bring it up when I spoke to her on the phone a few days later and told her Kenna was back in town.
"You told me she was leaving town last time we talked," she says.
"She is." I feel guilty when I say that, because I'm hoping with everything in me that it isn't true. Or she was. I don't know anymore.
"Do Patrick and Grace know the two of you are?"
"No." My mother blows out a soft breath.
"What are you doing?"
"I don't know," I say honestly.
"This isn't going to end well."
"I know."
"Do you love her?"
I blow out a heavy, slow rush of air. "I definitely don't hate her anymore." She takes a sip of her wine and gives this conversation a moment to settle.
"Well, I hope you do the right thing."
I lift an eyebrow. "What's the right thing?" My mother shrugs.
"I don't know. I just hope you do it."
I release a short laugh. Thanks for the non-advice.
"That's what I'm here for. To tiptoe around this thing they call parenting."
She smiles and reaches across the bar to squeeze my hand.
"I know you'd rather be with her right now. We don't mind if you abandon us tonight."
There's a moment of hesitation on my part, not because I don't want to go to Kenna's place, but because I'm surprised my mother knows who she is, yet she's still okay with it. "Do you blame Kenna?" I ask her after a short pause. My mother looks at me honestly.
"Scotty wasn't my child, so I felt sorry for everyone involved, even Kenna. But if what happened to Scotty had happened to you, I can't say that I would make a different choice than Patrick and Grace. I think there's room in a tragedy this size for everyone to be both right and wrong. However," she says, "I'm your mother, and if you see something special in her, then I know there must be something special in her."
I let her words ruminate, but then I grab my keys and my cell phone, and I kiss her on the cheek. "Will you be here tomorrow?"
"Yeah. We're staying 2 or 3 days. I'll tell your dad you said goodnight."
Chapter 36. Kenna. I'm in the shower when I hear a knock at my front door. It startles me because it's more like an incessant pounding. Lady Diana wouldn't knock like that, and she's the only person who has ever been here other than Ledger. I've just rinsed the conditioner out of my hair, so I open the bathroom door and yell, "Hold on!" I frantically try to dry myself and my hair with a towel as much as I can so I don't drip water all the way to my front door. I pull on a t-shirt and a pair of panties, and then grab my jeans and head to the door to check the peephole. When I see that it's Ledger, I unlock the door and then start pulling on the jeans as he makes his way inside. He seems jarred that I'm not fully dressed. He just stands there and stares at me until I get my jeans buttoned. I smile. You ditched your parents? He pulls me in for a kiss. But I'm caught off guard, because this kiss is more than just a kiss. There's so much behind the way his mouth presses against mine. It's like it's been weeks since he's seen me, but it's only been about 3 hours.
You smell so good,
he says, pressing his face into my wet hair. He slides his hands down my thighs and then lifts me, wrapping my legs around his waist. He walks us to the couch and lowers us onto it. This isn't a bed, I tease. He nips at my bottom lip with his teeth.
It's okay. I'm not as thoughtful as I tried to be earlier today. I'd have sex with you just about anywhere right now.
If this is happening, you might want to move me to that inflatable mattress because this couch is questionable. He doesn't miss a beat. He lifts me and drops me on the mattress. But as he's kissing my neck, Ivy begins to meow. She climbs up onto the mattress and starts licking Ledger's hand. He stops kissing me and looks at my kitten.
This is awkward.
I'll put her in the bathroom. I move the kitten to the bathroom and lock her in with her food and water. I lower myself on top of Ledger this time. I straddle him, sitting up, and he runs his hands up and down my thighs while his eyes scroll over me.
Are you still feeling good about this?
He asks. About what? Us? He nods. I've never felt good about us. Us is a terrible idea. He grabs the front of my shirt and pulls me down until our mouths are almost touching, rolls his other hand over my ass.
I'm serious.
I smile, because he can't expect me to be serious while also pressing himself against me like this. Are you trying to have a legitimate conversation while I'm on top of you? He flips us over so that he's hovering over me now.
I brought condoms. I want to take off your clothes. I want to have sex with you again. But I also feel like I should have a conversation with the Landrys before this goes any further.
It's just sex. He sighs and then says,
Kenna.
He just says my name like he's lecturing me. But then he presses his mouth to mine. And it's sweet and soft and so very different from every kiss that has come before it. I understand what he's saying. But I think I'm tired of circling around this discussion because I'd like to not think about it for a while. Every time I'm with him, my situation is all I think about. It's arduous, and to be honest, it's scary. I lift a hand to his cheek and brush a piece of couch fuzz away. You really want to know how I feel?
Yes, that's why I'm asking.
We both keep going back and forth. You worry, and then I worry, and then you worry. But the worry won't solve this. I feel like this isn't going to end well. Or maybe it will. Either way, we like being with each other. So until it ends well or ends terribly, I don't really want to waste our time together going in circles about a future we can't predict. So just get me naked and make love to me. Ledger shakes his head, but he's smiling.
It's like you read my mind.
Maybe. But everything I just said out loud isn't at all what I feel. What I feel is terrified. I know in my heart that there's nothing he can say that will change the Landrys' mind about me. They aren't even wrong. The decision they're making for themselves is the right decision, because it's the decision that will bring them the most peace. I'm going to respect that decision. After tonight. But right now, I'm going to be selfish. And focus on the one person in this world who sees me the way I wish everyone could see me. And if that means I have to lie to him and pretend this story can possibly have a happy ending, then that's what I'll do. I pull off his shirt, and then my shirt is next, followed by our jeans, and within seconds, we're both naked and he's putting on a condom. I don't know why we're rushing, but we're doing everything with urgency. Kissing, touching, gasping as if we're running out of time. He kisses his way down my body until his head is between my legs. He kisses both thighs before slowly separating me with his tongue. The sensation is so strong, I dig my heels into the mattress and slide up it, so he has to grip my thighs and pull my body back to his mouth. I reach for something to grab onto, but there's not even a blanket. So I put my hands in his hair and keep them there, moving in rhythm with his head. It doesn't take me long to finish, and as the sensations roll through me and my legs tense, Ledger intensifies the motion of his tongue. I tremble and moan until I can't take it anymore. I need him back inside me. I pull on his hair until he crawls up my body, and this time, he pushes into me in one quick movement. He thrusts so hard, over and over, until we somehow end up on the floor next to the inflatable mattress, covered in sweat and out of breath by the time it's over. We wind up in the shower together, my back against his chest. The water is running over us as he holds me quietly. The thought of saying goodbye to him at some point makes me want to curl up and cry. So I try to convince myself that I'm wrong about the Landrys. I try to lie to myself by saying things will work out between us. Maybe not tomorrow, maybe not this month, but hopefully Ledger is right. Maybe one of these days he can change their minds. Maybe he'll say something to them that will plant a seed, and that seed will grow and grow until they start to feel empathy for me. Whatever happens, I'll always be grateful to him for the forgiveness he gave me, whether I get it from anyone else or not. I turn around and face him, then I lift my hand and touch his cheek. I would have fallen for you even if you didn't love Diem. His expression shifts, and then he kisses the inside of my palm.
I fell for you because of how much you do.
Damn it, Ledger. I kiss him for that.
Chapter 37. Ledger. It's funny how life works out. I should be waking up in an oceanfront resort next to my brand new wife, celebrating our honeymoon right now. Instead, I'm waking up on an inflatable mattress in a barren apartment, next to a woman I've spent so many years angry at. If someone would have showed me this moment in a crystal ball last year, I would have wondered what could possibly have happened that would cause me to make a string of horrible decisions. But now that I'm in this moment, I realize I'm here because I finally have clarity. I've never felt more certain about the choices I've made in my life than I do today. I don't want Kenna to wake up yet. She looks peaceful, and I need a moment to formulate a plan for today. I want to confront this sooner rather than later. I'm scared of what the outcome will be, so a huge part of me wants to wait a couple of weeks so Kenna and I can live in secret bliss, full of hope that things are going to go her way. But the longer we wait, the sloppier we're going to get. The last thing I want is for Patrick and Grace to find out I've been lying to them before I can calmly confront them with my thoughts. Kenna moves her arm to cover her eyes and then rolls onto her side. She tucks herself against me and moans.
It's so bright in here.
Her voice is raspy and sexy. I run my hand down her waist, over her hip, and then grip her thigh, pulling her leg over me. I kiss her cheek. Sleep well? She laughs against my neck.
Sleep well? We had sex 3 times and then had to share a full-size inflatable mattress. I think I slept an hour, tops.
It's after 9. You slept more than an hour. Kenna sits up.
What? I thought the sun just came up.
She tosses the covers aside.
I was supposed to be at work by 9.
Oh, shit. I'll give you a ride. I search for my clothes. I find my shirt, but Kenna's kitten is curled up asleep inside of it. I lift her and set her on the couch and then start to pull on my jeans. Kenna is in the bathroom brushing her teeth. The door is open and she's completely naked, so I freeze in the middle of getting dressed because she's got a perfect ass. She sees me staring in the mirror and laughs, then kicks the bathroom door shut with her foot.
Get dressed!
I finish getting dressed, but then I join her in the bathroom because I want some of her toothpaste. She scoots aside as she's rinsing, and I start to squeeze some toothpaste on my finger, but she opens a drawer and pulls out a package that has a toothbrush in it.
I bought a double pack.
She hands me the extra toothbrush and then leaves the bathroom. We eventually meet at the front door. What time do you get off work? I pull her to me. She smells like fresh mint.
5.
We kiss.
Unless I get fired.
We kiss some more.
Ledger, I have to go.
She mutters against my mouth. But we kiss again. We make it to the grocery store by 9:45. She's 45 minutes late, but by the time we stop saying goodbye, she's 50 minutes late. I'll be here at 5, I say as she goes to close her door. She smiles.
Just because I put out now doesn't mean you have to be my chauffeur.
I was your chauffeur before you put out. She closes the door, but then comes around to my side of the truck. I already have my window down, and she leans in and gives me one final kiss. When she pulls back, she pauses for a moment. It looks like she wants to say something, but she doesn't. She just stares silently for a few seconds, like something is on the tip of her tongue. But then she backs away and runs into the store. I'm a mile from my house when I realize I've had a ridiculous smile on my face during the whole drive. I wipe it away, but it's the kind of smile that reappears with every thought I have about her. And all my thoughts this morning have been about her. My parents' RV is occupying the entire driveway, so I park in front of the house. Grace and Patrick are back already. He's out front watering his yard, and DM is sitting in their driveway with a bucket of chalk. I force the smile off my face. Not that a simple smile would give away everything that's happened in the last 24 hours, but Patrick knows me well enough that he might think my behavior is due to a girl. Then he'll ask questions. Then I'll have to lie to him even more than I have been. DM turns around when I close my truck door.
Ledger!
She looks both ways before meeting me in the middle of the street. I scoop her up and give her a big hug. Did you have fun at Grandma Nono's house?
Yeah, we found a turtle, and Nono let me keep it. It's in my room in a glass thing.
I want to see. I put her back down and she grabs my hand, but before we even reach the grass, Patrick and I make eye contact. My heart immediately sinks. His face is hard. There's no hello. It's the most resigned I've ever seen him. His eyes fall to Diem and he says, "You can show him your turtle in a minute. I need to talk to Ledger." Diem can't feel the tension radiating from him, which is why she skips into the house while I'm frozen at the edge of the grass Patrick has been mindlessly watering. When the front door closes, he doesn't say anything. He just continues to water the grass, like he's waiting for me to admit my fuck-up. I'm worried for more reasons than one. His demeanor is making it obvious something is wrong, but if I say something first, I could be off the mark. Anything could be wrong. Maybe his mother is ill, or they received bad news he doesn't want DM to hear. The way he's acting could be completely unrelated to Kenna. So I wait for him to say whatever it is that seems so hard for him to say. He releases the nozzle and drops the water hose. He walks closer to me, and each of his deliberate steps is aligned with the pounding of my heartbeat. He stops walking about 3 feet from me, but my heartbeats just keep pounding. I don't like how silent it is between us. I can tell he's about to confront me. And Patrick is not a confrontational person. The fact that he's not circling around what he wants to say with a whelp has me more than concerned. Something is bothering him, and it's serious. I attempt to alleviate the tension by casually saying, "When did you guys get back?" "This morning," he says. "Where were you?" He asks it like he's my father, and he's pissed I snuck out in the middle of the night. I don't even know what to say. I'm searching for whatever lie would fit this moment the best, but none of them seem to fit. I can't say I was parked in my garage because my parents' RV is in the way. I can't say I was home because obviously my truck hasn't been here. Patrick shakes his head. His face is filled with galaxy-sized disappointment. He was your best friend, Ledger. I try to hide my inhale. I shove my hands in my pockets and look at my feet. Why is he saying this? I don't know what to say. I don't know what he knows. I don't know how he knows. We saw your truck at her apartment this morning. His voice is low, and he's not looking at me. It's like he can't stand the person standing across from him. I was certain it was a coincidence, that someone who has a truck just like yours lived in the building. But when I pulled up next to it to get a better look, I saw DM's car seat. Patrick, are you sleeping with her? His voice is monotone and flat in an unnerving way. I reach an arm over my chest and squeeze my shoulder. My chest is so tight it feels like my lungs are in a vice grip. I think the three of us need to sit down and talk about this. Are you sleeping with her? He repeats, much louder this time. I run a hand down my face, frustrated that this is how it's coming to a head. I just needed a few hours, and I was going to talk to them about it. It would have been so much better that way. We've been all wrong about her. I say it unconvincingly, because I know nothing I could say right now is going to be absorbed by him, not when he's this angry. He releases a half-hearted laugh, but then his face just falls into the saddest frown, and his eyebrows draw apart. Have we? We've been wrong? He takes a step closer to me, finally looking me in the eyes. His expression is full of betrayal. Did she not leave my son to die? Did your best friend not spend his last hours on this earth alone on a deserted road, barely breathing because of her? A tear escapes, and he angrily wipes it away. He's so angry he has to blow out a steady breath to keep him from screaming at me. It was an accident, Patrick. My voice is almost a whisper. She loved Scotty. She panicked and made the wrong choice, but she paid for that choice. At what point can we stop blaming her? He chooses to answer that question with his fist. He punches me hard in the mouth. I do nothing, because I feel so guilty that they found out this way. I'd let him punch me a million more times, and I still wouldn't defend myself. Hey! My father is running out of my house, heading toward us. Patrick hits me again, right when Grace runs out her front door. My father pushes himself between us before Patrick can get in a third punch. What the hell, Pat? My dad yells. Patrick doesn't look at him. He's looking at me without even an ounce of regret. I take a step forward to plead with him, because I don't want this conversation to end now that it's finally out there. But Diem runs outside. Patrick doesn't see her before he tries to lunge at me again. For Christ's sake! My dad yells, pushing him back. Stop it! Diem starts crying when she takes in the commotion. Grace reaches for her and starts to take Diem in the house, but Diem wants me. She's reaching for me, and I don't know what to do.
I want to go with Ledger!
DM pleads. Grace half turns and looks at me. I can tell by the look of betrayal on her face that she might even be hurting more than Patrick is right now. Grace, please, just hear me out. She turns her back to me and disappears with DM inside her house. I can hear DM cry, even after the door closes, and I feel like she just ripped open my chest. "Don't you dare try to put your choices on us," Patrick says. "You can choose that woman, or you can choose Diem, but don't you dare try to make us feel guilty for a choice we came to peace with 5 years ago. You did this to yourself, Ledger." Patrick turns and walks back inside. My father releases my arm. He moves so that he's in front of me, and I'm sure he's going to try to calm me down, but I don't give him the opportunity. I walk to my truck, and I leave. I go to the bar, but instead of going inside, I beat on the door to Roman's stairwell. I beat constantly until he opens it. He looks confused, but then he sees my busted lip, and he says, "Ah, hell." He steps aside and then follows me up the stairs to his apartment. I go to the kitchen and wet some paper towels to wipe the blood from my mouth. "What happened?" "I spent the night with Kenna. The Landrys found out."
"Patrick did that?"
I nod. Roman's eyes narrow. "You didn't hit him back, did you? He's like 60 years old." "Of course not. But not because of his age. He's as strong as I am. I didn't hit him back because I deserved this." I pull the paper towel from my mouth, and the whole thing is covered with blood. I walk to the bathroom and inspect my face. My eye looks okay. It'll probably be a little bruised, but my lip is sliced up on the inside. I think he hit me so hard my tooth cut through my lip. Fuck. Blood is pouring out of my mouth. I think I need stitches. Roman looks at my mouth and then winces. "Shit, man." He grabs a washcloth and wets it, then hands it to me and says, "Come on, I'll drive you to the ER.
Chapter 38. Kenna. There's a little more bounce in my step as soon as I walk out of the store and spot Ledger's truck across the parking lot. He sees me exit the store, so he drives across the lot to pick me up. I climb inside the truck and scoot across the seat to give him a kiss. He doesn't turn to face me, so my lips land on his cheek. I would sit in the middle, but his console is down, and he's got a drink in the cup holder, so I sit in the passenger seat and pull on my seatbelt. He's wearing shades and hasn't looked at me since I got into the truck. I begin to grow concerned, but then he reaches across his console to hold my hand, and it puts me at ease. I was starting to worry that he spent the day regretting last night, but I can feel in the way he squeezes my hand that he's happy to see me. Paranoia is annoying. "Guess what?"
"What?"
"I got a promotion. Cashier. It pays $2 more an hour."
"That's great, Kenna."
He still doesn't look at me, though. He releases my hand and leans an elbow on his door, resting his head against his left hand while he drives with his right. I stare at him for a little bit, wondering why he seems different. Quieter. My mouth is starting to run dry, so I say, "Can I have a sip of your drink?" Ledger takes it out of the cup holder and hands it to me.
"It's sweet tea, a couple of hours old."
I take a drink and stare at him the whole time. I put the cup back in the holder. "What's wrong?" He shakes his head.
"Nothing."
"Did you talk to them? Did something happen?"
"It's nothing,"
he says, his voice thick with the lie. I think he recognizes how unconvincing he sounds because after a pause he adds,
"Let's just get to your place first."
I sink into my seat when he says that. Anxiety rolls through me like a wave. I don't push him to tell me now, because I'm scared to know what has him so stiff. I stare out my window the whole way to my apartment with a gut feeling that this will be the last time Ledger Ward gives me a ride home. He pulls into the parking spot and kills his engine. I unbuckle and exit the truck, but after I close my door, I realize he's still sitting there. He taps his steering wheel with his thumb, looking lost in thought. After several seconds, he finally opens his door and gets out. I walk around to meet him and get a better read on him. But I pause as soon as I'm face to face with him. Oh my God. His lip is swollen. I rush up to him just as he slides the sunglasses on top of his head. That's when I see the black eye. I'm scared to ask, so my voice is timid when I say, "What happened?" He closes the gap between us and wraps an arm around my shoulders, pulling me against him so that his chin is resting on top of my head. He just tucks me to him for a beat, and then gives me a chaste kiss on the side of my head.
"Let's go inside."
He slips his hand through mine and leads me up the stairs. Once we're inside my apartment, I barely have the door shut before I ask him again, "What happened, Ledger?" He leans against the counter and grabs my hand. He pulls me to him and smooths my hair back, looking down at me.
"They saw my truck here this morning."
Any morsel of hope I left with this morning immediately dissipates.
"He hit you?"
Ledger nods, and I have to back away and compose myself because I feel nauseous. I want to cry because how mad would Patrick have to be to hit someone? The way Scotty and Ledger have talked about him, he doesn't seem like the type to lose his temper easily. Which means they hate me. They hate me so much, the thought of Ledger and me together made a generally kind, calm man lose his mind on him. I was right. They're making him choose. The panic begins spreading from my chest to all the other parts of my body. I take a sip of water, and then I pick up Ivy, who has been meowing at my feet. I pet her. I try to find comfort in her presence. She's my only constant now, because this story is ending exactly how I predicted it. No plot twists at all. I came here with one goal, and that was to try to forge a relationship with the Landrys and with my daughter. But they've made it very clear that it's not something they want. Maybe it's just not something they can emotionally handle. I put Ivy back on the floor and then fold my arms across my chest. I can't even look at Ledger when I ask him this question. "Did they ask you to stop seeing me?" He exhales, and his sigh is everything I need to know. I try to hold it together, but I just want him to leave. Or maybe I need to leave. This apartment, this town, this state. I want as far away from my daughter as I can get, because the closer I am to her without being able to see her, the more tempting it becomes to just go to their house and take her. I'm desperate enough that if I stay here too much longer, I might do something stupid. "I need money." Ledger looks at me like he didn't understand the question, or he can't process why I need money. "I need to move, Ledger. I can pay you back, but I need to leave, and I don't have enough money to get a new place. I can't stay here."
"Wait," he says, stepping toward me. "You're leaving? You're giving up?"
His choice of words makes me angry.
"I'd say I tried pretty damn hard. They have a restraining order against me. I wouldn't call that giving up."
"What about us? You're just going to walk away?"
"Don't be an asshole. This is harder for me than it is for you. At least you still get Diem in the end."
He grips my shoulders, but I look away from him. So he moves his hands to the sides of my head. He tilts my face and directs my focus back to his.
"Kenna, don't.